Hey everyone, Homes.com knows having the right agent can make or break your home search. That's why they provide home shoppers with an agent directory that gives you a detailed look at each agent's experience, like the number of closed sales in a specific neighborhood, average price range, and more. It lets you easily connect with all the agents in the area you're searching so you can find the right agent with the right experience and ultimately the right home for you. Homes.com, we've done your homework.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. For this week's Select, I've chosen our 2019 episode on trick-or-treating. It's a really in-depth look at trick-or-treating, and it's got a lot of surprising stuff inside. Like, it turns out that if you don't set abandoned buildings on fire on Halloween, then you've been trick-or-treating all wrong all this time. But don't worry, we're releasing this just in time for you to learn the ropes this Halloween. Happy and extremely safe Halloween, everybody.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark, and there's Charles W. Chuck Bryan over there. There's Jerry, and this is Stuff You Should Know, the right before Halloween edition. About
trick-or-treating.
I feel like a little kid every Halloween.
I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah.
Do you get trick-or-treaters?
No, not really.
No.
Condo life, hashtag, et cetera.
Yeah, and I've told my story before, but I'll just briefly summarize again that my house is after a big curve in the road, and people seem to just stop at that curve in the road.
Well, they don't want to come up on old man Bryant's house.
No.
You know, the old dead oak tree with the big hole in it that Boo Radley hides figures in is kind of off-putting. It's right on your property.
And I think in my neighborhood, too, the cops close off two blocks. There's just this big square of streets, and that's the official sanctioned no-stress area where the parents all just walk around and get drunk, and all the kids just run around and don't have to worry about cars.
Right.
So everyone in my neighborhood is congregated there. So,
and you're outside of the comfort zone?
Yeah, which I kind of miss. Like, I like trick-or-treaters coming to my house. I guess I could maybe I could move a few houses in, which I'm not going to do.
Or you could casually move the roadblocks a little further back to include your house.
Well, they're actual police cars with police officers. Well, I can't move them.
Give them some 20s.
But I could put signs at like, you know, this way for the best yet. And then you're like, only two more houses.
Right, or like leave a trail of candy.
Because I remember when I first moved to Atlanta, we rented a house that got a lot of trick-or-treaters, and I loved it, man. I scared the heck out of those kids.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Like, that was my first big adult giving out candy night. Like, the first time I've ever been able to do that.
Uh-huh.
Because we didn't have kids yet, so we weren't out trick-or-treating.
Sure.
And, I pumped music out, like the Psycho theme and scary John Carpenter stuff.
Sure.
I really enjoyed it.
Did you, like, do anything to overtly scare them?
Oh, yes. I was dressed up as a very scary person.
Uh-huh.
And I would jump out and scare them over and over and over.
Did you really jump out?
Mm-hmm.
Good for you, Chuck.
Or I would stand in the, like, Emily would be giving out candy, and I would just be in the darkened house, like, 8 feet behind her, just standing there motionless. That's always a nice tack.
Nice.
But point is, I sort of feel like we're missing out. Like, we certainly enjoy taking our daughter out, but I really wish we had kids that came by.
Yeah, I wish you did too,
Chuck. It's too bad.
Yeah.
A stupid house right there near the main road.
So close, yet so far away.
So far away.
Yeah. And that's your forever house too, huh?
Yeah.
No trick-or-treaters ever again for you.
I'm locked in there. But what we could do is, you know, we could go to a friend's house and
that doesn't count. Then you have to
jump on their coattails.
You can't sit on their couch. You have to take your shoes off in their house. You can't be comfortable.
We've long talked, me and my friend Eddie and Allison, you know them, about they have a good backyard, about doing like a haunted trail one year.
Uh-huh.
That, like, if you come trick-or-treating, you got to go through the trail first.
It sounds like a lot of work.
It is, and it would be fun.
No, I mean for the kids who have to go through the trail.
Got
to
earn.
Right, you got to earn that free candy.
Earn that Reese's Pieces.
So we just hit upon like 15 different themes in this episode, if you'll agree.
Agreed.
You agree?
Yes.
So we're talking about trick-or-treating here. And if you look at the thing on its face, just the words, trick or treat, there seems to be some sort of option here. You can do one or the other.
There used to be.
Give me a treat or you get a trick, basically, was the equation.
Yeah, they should just change the name now to just Treat Night.
Treat Night, right, exactly. We aren't 100% sure on where trick-or-treating came from, but what we do know is that it was originated in America in the 20th century and that there was this brief golden age where it lived up to its name, trick or treat. There was an offer to not get pranked or tricked. And if you didn't take the people up on the offer, the kids up on the offer by giving them candy, you got pranked. That was the equation. It was in the name. Everybody knew the score. And then it slowly kind of moved over to what we understand today, where the police set up roadblocks and everything is safe.
These kids these days.
And it's just kind of, just like you said, just the treat side of the equation.
Yeah, I was, of course, kidding, but we'll get to it. There are people that really do decry this new generation of children who just expect handouts and that it leads to the idea of the welfare state.
Right.
And all this other garbage that I have no patience for.
Sure.
Because it's just a fun thing for kids.
Yeah.
Or do you think they should be earning the stuff?
No. I don't feel that way. I do feel, well, I think it'll come through loud and clear as we do the episode.
All right. Well, we should jump back a little bit to the origins of Halloween. We've gone over this before in episodes past, but we all know it originally started as a pagan harvest, or not just one, but pagan harvest festivals in general among the Celts over in the UK.
Yes.
And that evolved into Halloween, but it had nothing to do with trick-or-treating at the time.
No, it wasn't around. Again, trick-or-treating is a 100% American invention.
That's right.
And so with Halloween in particular, you've got all these different components for the modern Halloween or for trick-or-treating.
Yes.
You have going from house to house. You have getting to said house and asking for a treat, basically sanctioned begging.
You got your costume.
Costume, dressing up. Got being outside, kind of parading around. All of these things find their origin in the Celtic and I think specifically Gaelic harvest festivals that introduced the dark half of the year.
That's right.
And in particular, there was Samhain, which forever I've always said Samhain because that's how it's spelled.
No, you said Samhain right when we did our Halloween episode, didn't you?
Probably.
Yeah.
By the way, speaking of Samhain or Samhain, you realize that I went to New York and saw the Misfits on Saturday.
Oh, yeah. How was that? I'm sure it was great.
Colossally amazing.
This is the original Misfits, right?
The original Misfits. Glenn Danzig, Jerry Only.
Sure.
Doyle Wolfgang von Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Who actually specifically invited us to this.
Stuff You Should Know listener, right?
Yes. To this this show, and it was—
That's amazing.
Knock Your Socks Off amazing.
Didn't The Damned play as well?
The Damned opened, and then Rancid, and then the Misfits just tore the roof off the sucker.
When I saw you were going, I looked up some YouTube clips of this tour, and it looked pretty amazing.
It was amazing, and I think Glenn Danzig said that was their last one ever.
Oh, really?
And so we got to see it.
Wow.
Yeah, you, me, and I went, had a great time.
Amazing.
So big, big thanks to Doyle Wolfgang von Frankenstein for the invite.
The stage setup looked great.
It was just a really cool show, and they played almost everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just a really good show.
That's fantastic.
So anyway, back to Samhain.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's a perfect time to mention that show, though.
Yeah.
It all worked out.
It did.
Hallows Eve was the night considered when the veil between the living and the dead was the shortest.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when that's when Halloween formed.
Right, right. So people would dress up in like modern-day Ireland, Scotland, I believe Wales.
Yeah, Wales.
Isle of Man. They would dress up like demons or fairies or supernatural characters who were, because this veil was so thin between the living and the dead, or the supernatural.
Right.
They could cross over. These yes. creatures could cross over.
And communicate.
So if you dressed up like them, maybe they would be confused and think you're one of them and leave you alone.
That's right.
So this now we've got the costume thing going, right?
That's right. And part of that was the community getting together, getting drunk on, you know, probably high-octane
mead
and stuff like that. And they would parade through the town. They still have Halloween parades all over the place.
Right.
Here in Atlanta, we have one of the best in Little Five Points. The
yeah.
Halloween parade, fantastic.
Like when you think about the Halloween parade at your town, like that is centuries, millennia old.
Yeah.
That tradition is.
Yeah. So we have those two things going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then the one missing piece is knock, knock, hey, give me candy.
Right.
But this we have the origins of, which came, and it's still not Halloween. It took American kids to put all this stuff together.
Mm-hmm.
But the European tradition of souling, which was when kids on Hallow's Eve would go from house to house and pray for the souls of the departed, and in exchange you would get a soul cake.
Yeah, which I looked up. They look pretty good.
What is it? Just a little baked good?
It looks like a muffin top, like top of the muffin to you.
Ah.
It looks really good.
Soul cakes. Or mumming, which is, and this sounds fantastic. I wish kids still had to do this stuff.
Yeah.
You would have to perform a short musical number or some kind of performance to get a treat of some kind.
Right.
Or maybe a little spare change.
Right. So in that sense, you have going to house and getting something from the owners of the house, like a treat or something like that.
That's right.
But there was a reason for that, praying for the soul of their departed loved one, doing mm-hmm. a little dance number, something like that. The prank part of the equation, that also existed before trick-or-treating too. And in fact, that was kind of the origin or the biggest tradition of Halloween itself was pranking.
Yeah, and that came from Ireland, is that right?
Yeah, supposedly in the 1880s, they would just run around doing pranks, and then they would blame those fairies or demons
right.
on Samhain for the mischief. That it wasn't us, it was the fairies.
On
that
Samhain?
Right. I mean, that's how it's spelled.
Yeah, it's really, that's a confounding pronunciation.
It is, but there you have it.
That's right. And then pranks back then, and of course, were pretty low-key, ding-dong ditch, stuff like that. Moving the neighbor's furniture to the roof.
I saw that.
Yeah,
like
bad.
Flower pot on the chimney.
Sure.
But it would also get way, way worse than that.
Yeah, I looked up Mischief Night. We never did that in Georgia.
No. Or Devil's Night, it was also called.
Yeah, which is the night before Halloween when mm-hmm. all these pranks would happen. Region to region is called different. Apparently in New Jersey, it's Mischief Night.
Or Cabbage Night or something?
Well, in Camden, New Jersey, it's Mischief Night. Other parts of New Jersey call it Cabbage Night. Cincinnati calls it Damage Night.
That's pretty overt. That's a punk band name right there.
Damage Night?
Yeah.
Totally. That's insurance deductible night. Other part, I don't know why Ohio is so highly represented here. Beggar's Night is something else they called it in Ohio.
Chuck, because there's nothing else to do in Ohio but sit around and wait for that night.
For Hallow's Eve. Other names, Doorbell Night, Trick Night, Corn Night, Tic Tac Night, Goosey Night. And then in Canada, Gate Night or Mat Night if you're in Quebec.
Because
M-A-T.
They would steal the gate off your fence or the mat from your doorstep and
oh, really?
Remove it, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So they're pretty on the nose, especially Damage yeah. Night.
But Devil's Night in Detroit, it became legendary over about a 20-year period
mm-hmm.
in the 70s and through the mid-90s,
right.
I saw,
yeah.
before they finally got a little bit of a, could put a dent in it by forming Angel's Night.
Yeah, they kind of rebranded it.
Well, not rebranded. The angels were volunteers who would walk around to keep kids from setting everything on fire.
Oh, okay. Because that's what they did on Devil's Night. It was a night of arson.
It was a night of arson.
I thought that it ran its course because they burned all the buildings down in Detroit and there was nothing else left.
It was a real problem, though. I looked into it and like hundreds of kids, like in 1994, I think there were like 315 kids arrested
For
on Devil's
fires.
Night. Fires and other stuff.
In 1984, the peak of Devil's Night
yeah.
in Detroit, there were 810 cases of arson in
That's
one night
amazing.
In Detroit.
Yeah.
They would just set the city on fire.
And I'm sure some of these were bags of poop on a doorstep.
Right.
Which I think we can all agree is harmless fun.
It is, unless you're the steppy
So, I never did any of this stuff. I never rolled a house.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
Oh, that's fun.
I'm so mad. I was so busy being good.
It's never too late, buddy.
I know. I should roll a house or fork a yard.
I don't know what that is.
The plastic forks. Just basically get like 2,000 plastic forks and stick them in the yard.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I've never heard of that one.
You never did that?
I'm going to really chew up a lawnmower.
I never egged a house because I always heard that that really damages paint.
Yeah.
But we did have the junior senior egg fight every year. That was kind of fun.
Well, there you go. You got something.
We get together in a field and throw eggs at each other.
Aside from wasting a
lot of
precious
eggs.
Resource
yeah.
with, well, eggs, yes, but also toilet paper, you really should roll somebody's house at least once in your life. It's great.
Is it?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm going to roll your condo.
I remember when I was a kid, actually, my friend and I rolled the neighbor's house, but we had to be in early, so we were doing it basically in broad daylight. It was dusk at best.
Yeah.
And a cop drove by, which never happened in our neighborhood, ever, never. Mm-hmm. The cops just weren't needed, right? It was just, I think we talked about in the free range episode, free range parents episode, you could just do whatever. And we had to knock out of the house of the neighbor whose house we just rolled to let us in to hide from the cop.
Oh,
and
wow.
She went out and told the cop, like, it's fine, don't worry about it. Holy but we rolled her house and had to get safe harbor from her.
Yeah, and you can't really clean up a rolled house, can you?
You can,
but
and
you have
I
to
have,
wait for the rain?
If they come tell your parents what you did.
How do you do
it? The rain makes it way worse.
Yeah, but I mean, you can't climb up there, can you?
Right, some of it's inevitably stuck up there, but you can pull it down as gingerly as you can to get as much as you can. But no, some's going to be left over.
All right, I'm going to roll a house.
Okay, just know whose house you're rolling. Like, you don't want to get shot at or anything like that.
I don't see that anymore either. I feel like I don't live in the suburbs. Maybe it's a little more prone to happen there.
Yeah.
But it seems like a lost art.
It very well may be. I don't know anybody who rolls. I just assumed it was because we'd outgrown it, you know?
Emily called it TPing a house.
Yeah. That's Ohio.
Yeah.
Yeah. TP.
All right. Let's take a break.
We barely talked about this. I think we're one page in.
Good. That's great.
All right. Everybody, it's time you heard about Squarespace. Squarespace has the tools you need to create and sell your own website. Whether it's an online course or custom merch, Squarespace has you covered.
That's right. Courses is a great program. You can start with a professional layout that fits your brand, upload video lessons to teach techniques and skills, and tailor your course with a powerful Fluid Engine editor.
That's right. With Fluid Engine, which is a next-generation website design system, by the way, it's never been easier for anyone to unlock unbreakable creativity.
That's right. And don't forget the commerce side, because after that, you can charge a one-time fee or you can even sell a subscription.
Yeah. So turn your creativity into income with Squarespace courses. And right now, go to squarespace.com/stuff for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code STUFF to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Squarespace. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Hey, everybody, if you're building a deck at work and you want to supercharge it, check out Canva Presentations. Work docs have been the same for too long, but Canva docs are different. They're visual. They grab readers' attention with images, charts, tables, and videos playable right in the doc. Plus, docs don't have to be just words on a page. You can make your docs pop with Canva docs.
That's right. And Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, HR, ops, marketing, and more, Canva presentations can be the solution for you. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it.
Canva presentations might be the most visually impressive presentations you'll ever use. Start with a stunning template, use it as a springboard for your design, adding images, graphics, charts, data visualizations, all from a massive media library. It's super easy to wow any audience with Canva presentations.
So start designing today at canva.com, designed for work. That's canva.com.
Stuff you should know. All right. So to recap, Chuck, we have the costumes in play now. Mm-hmm. We have being out on Halloween night, sometimes parading drunkenly.
Community.
We have going from house to house. Mm-hmm. And we have the prank factor.
That's right.
All of these things are out there floating around, have been out there for centuries, millennia, by the time America is born and makes it to the 20th century. Mm-hmm. And at some point, some kids said, we think, hey, you know what? We could pull all this together and turn it into something really amazing mm-hmm. and peculiar and unique called trick-or-treating.
That's right. You found a great piece from a sociologist named Samira Kawash.
Great name.
Called Gangsters, Pranksters, and Trick-or-Treating, 1930 to 1960.
Yeah.
And is this that pure period
yeah.
that you were talking about where she thinks that American kids just created this thing?
Yeah, there's two historical views because we don't know where it came from.
Uh-huh.
One historical view, and I think this is what Kawash believes too, is that it was actually kids who figured this out.
Which is great.
Who said, we can extort adults to not prank them mm-hmm. if they give us treats.
Right.
And that it was a genuinely a kid, a invention of kids.
Mm-hmm.
They made it up.
Right.
And there's some evidence for that kind of thing. A lot of like the early newspaper accounts of it kind of call the kids gangsters and say they're extorting people. It's also possible that it was like written super tongue in cheek.
Right.
And that dry, it was kind of dry and lost to the ages.
Yeah.
The other historical view is that the kids were out pranking and doing the pranks. And it was the adults that introduced treats into the equation to buy them off.
Oh, okay.
To keep them from pranking.
Right. Los Angeles, possibly, as the point of origin.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, wealthy kids. I guess that makes sense that this would be the idea of, like, kids of privilege.
Sure.
You know?
Uh-huh.
Like, come around, give me stuff. but apparently in Los Angeles, kids in the wealthy parts of town would dress up, and their parents would take them around from house to house. And this is at pre-1930 period, though.
Yeah, they think sometime in the 20s. And if you think about it, that really resembles what we do today.
Yeah.
But in between that origin and where we've arrived today, there was this pure period
mm-hmm.
from 1930 to 1960. Some people might even take it a little further beyond that, where the kids seem to have run the show and there really was both sides of the equation, a trick
right.
or a treat.
Right. But that term actually was in 1927 in an article, right? Is that the first time they found the two words in print together?
Yeah, right.
Or I guess three words.
Mm-hmm.
That was in an article about a town called Blackie in Alberta, Canada.
Yeah.
And it seems like all of it was sort of on the West Coast early on.
Yeah. And again, they think possibly it did originate in Los Angeles, or it may have originated in multiple towns on the West Coast roughly at the same time.
But we're thinking 20s because in 1919, there was a book by Ruth Edna called...
Ruth Edna Kelly.
Ruth Edna Kelly called The Book of Halloween, and it didn't mention any kind of trick-or-treating in there.
No, and it's like an exhaustive, comprehensive homemaker's overview.
It would have been in there.
Right.
For sure.
And you got to think, like, poor Ruth Edna Kelly's like, gosh... If I just waited like 2 years right. to put this book out, they're going to come up with something brand new with Halloween.
I know.
2 years after I come up with this book.
I wrote the book on it.
Right.
Not quite.
Now it's out of date.
But they did find mentions of it in newspapers out west. Portland, Washington, Reno, Nevada, Helena, Montana.
Yeah, and you can kind of track its progress from the dates. in the mentions in these newspaper articles. Right, yeah. So there's those two sides. One say that it was kids who came up with it on their own. Perhaps they were introduced with the idea of going from house to house to get treats in Los Angeles. But then they said, well, we're also doing these prankings. Maybe we can say, hey, we won't prank you if you give us a treat.
Right.
There's that view. The other view, again, is that it was adults who said, whoa, kids, you know, we don't want you setting fires any longer, derailing streetcars, because every once in a while somebody would die.
Yeah.
People would get shot at by angry neighbors. Sometimes somebody would be in one of those buildings that they set on fire and they'd die. People would die in a building that kids set on fire as a Halloween prank. So for the most part, though, it was just kind of tolerated as one night a year when the kids basically had power and were allowed to run the show. So this idea, this other historical view that adults finally said, hey, you know, we're not going to just say you can't do pranking. That'd probably be a bad thing. But why don't we just start having parties on Halloween night while you're out pranking, and there'll be cider and donuts, and you can come inside and bob for apples, and maybe do that instead of running around pranking the neighborhood. And once you did do that, you went from, and this is Samira Kawash putting it, like you, under the rules of society, you went from this powerful kid who could levy a prank on you if he or she wanted to a house guest of the adult who now had you in and had given you donuts and cider.
Right.
You're really going to set their house on fire as a prank after that?
Of course not.
No, you're not going to. So in this sense, trick-or-treating was something the adults introduced to keep kids from carrying out these pranks.
Yeah, and it was, by the time World War II came around, it was a big thing in the 1940s. But of course, with the sugar rationing, and just the fact that there was World War II going on, it put a dent in it for a little while, but it came back bigger than it ever had been after the war.
And I mean, seriously, it came very close to dying
just
out
going
from
away.
World War II.
Sure.
It was pretty new. It hadn't gained that much traction. There were a lot of cranks and grumps who were not happy about this kind of thing.
I'm curious what else had died in the war and never came back.
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be lots of little things.
That's a great question. We should look it up.
Yeah. But there were a couple of big pop culture sort of tent poles that helped Halloween along. Charles Schulz's Peanuts, of course.
Yeah.
It wasn't the Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown yet.
That was the 60s, I think.
Yeah, but in 1951, he had a four-day comic strip run around Halloween where the Peanuts gang got all ready and got their costumes going.
Mm-hmm.
And that really brought it to the forefront. And then Donald Duck, it was a cartoon, Donald Duck Trick or Treat, a year after that, that had Donald working with his nephews, or trying to prank his nephews while they were trick-or-treating.
Right.
And working with the witch. And then the candy companies get involved.
There was also a very famous costume company called Ben Cooper Costumes.
Yeah, they're the ones who did like the cheap
Plastic mask and like a vinyl smock.
That's right.
But they had this really great talent of identifying what was going to be like a pop culture phenomenon before it ever blew up.
Yeah,
so they get the rights for cheap.
Yeah.
But they were also making these things like 10 months before.
Yeah.
So they really had to have foresight and they were really good at it. But the fact that you could get cheap, amazing costumes that the little kids all wanted of their favorite characters, that definitely helped things along too.
Yeah, it was. It's hard to overstate like how big of a deal it was to a kid to be the certain whatever they wanted to be.
I think it's still that way.
I'm sure it is, but now it's a lot easier, I think, to buy costumes.
Right.
I think when you and I were kids, there was a lot of fashioning costumes.
Uh-huh.
When you didn't have the ability to be like the alien from Alien, or, you know, it was a lot harder to put together these elaborate costumes. But once you got your heart set on it, you had to.
Sure.
You know?
So I'm going to tell you my best costume, and you tell me yours, okay?
Okay.
My mom made one from scratch.
Yeah.
Clown, which is a clown costume.
Mm-hmm.
But the big kicker was that it was an upside down clown walking on his hands.
Mm-hmm.
So my feet were the clown's hands.
Yeah.
His head is like dangling between my legs.
That's good.
I've got his legs sticking up off of my shoulders. And I don't remember, my head must have been covered up like I was in his butt or something like that.
Right.
But I was an upside down walking clown. Greatest costume ever.
Really?
Yeah.
You got any pictures?
Somewhere, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I did a lot of funny ones. Like, my brother and I were Han Solo and Luke Skywalker when I was really little.
Nice.
But then I got into, like, I was always wanting to do, like, funny characters I like. like Ed Grimley one year, the Saturday Night Live character. I did Ed Grimley one year.
That's a good one.
And I was, I don't know, I felt like I was always trying to make people laugh. I never did scary stuff.
Right, until little kids started coming around and trick-or-treating at your house?
Yes.
So then you started to scare
Or like movie characters. Mm-hmm. Like even into my adult years, you know, I would try and find some cool movie character like H.I. from Raising Arizona I did one year.
Yeah, that's
and,
a good, that's almost Ed Grimley, same hair.
No, not same at all, actually. and then one year I did a great, I actually won a contest in New Jersey one year when I was a Hare Krishna, and I like shaved my head. I did the whole thing.
Wow!
I had literature. I passed out.
Wow!
Made the whole deal.
You just ended up joining a local chapter
for a little while. It was fine.
Really got into the role,
but I haven't. It's been a few years since I've dressed up.
Yeah, same here.
Because I just.
Oh, that's not true.
I haven't been to a Halloween party in probably 5 years.
Right.
What were you last year?
I was Patrick Bateman from American Psycho.
Oh. So you were you, but with a tie.
Right, exactly. And like a giant inflatable brick cell phone.
Uh-huh.
And Yumi was a specific Michael Jackson, a moment of Michael Jackson's history where he's holding blanket over the balcony.
Oh, sure.
And Momo was blanket. It's on. You can see it on Instagram.
That's great. Yeah. I'll have to check that out. All right, so the candy company started getting involved. That's where I left off.
Yeah. Because and the costume company.
They knew it was gold for them. Mars Incorporated in the early 1950s were doing ad campaigns on TV and in newspapers and on the radio and stuff about trick-or-treat. It became a thing with UNICEF. They had a trick-or-treat for UNICEF campaign back then.
I think they still might. You know what I'm talking about? The little boxes holds change.
Yeah.
And they would just give them to little kids, and while they were out trick-or-treating, they'd also ask for change for UNICEF.
Right.
To help needy kids overseas.
Yeah.
And that actually went a really long way to legitimizing trick-or-treating.
Yeah, they're doing a lot these days, too, for kids, special needs kids. Mm-hmm. Like, it's taken this long to finally get the word out. Like the blue pumpkins, have you heard of those?
No.
If you trick-or-treat with a blue pumpkin, that means that you have some sort of special need where you may not be able to walk to a front door and say, trick or treat, I'm dressed as, you know, Michigan J. Bullfrog.
What?
That'd be a great costume.
It would be, but did you pull that off of?
I just made, yeah.
Wow. Nice.
He's been on my mind lately.
I guess so.
But so people know, like, oh, you've got a blue pumpkin, so I shouldn't say, like, you know, come on, kid, why don't you tell me what your costume is?
Shake him.
And it's good, though. Like, it's ironic that it's taken this long to get parents on board to the fact that some kids need, you know, different kinds of treatment.
I don't know if ironic is the best word as much as disappointing is.
Yeah.
You know?
You're probably right. Should we take another break?
Oh, my God. We're going to have to take three more.
No, we're not.
Okay, yes, we will then. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Hey, everybody, if you're building a deck at work and you want to supercharge it, check out Canva Presentations. Work docs have been the same for too long, but Canva docs are different. They're visual. They grab readers' attention with images, charts, tables, and videos playable right in the doc. Plus, docs don't have to be just words on a page. You can make your docs pop with Canva docs.
That's right. And Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, HR, ops, marketing, and more, Canva presentations can be the solution for you. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it.
Canva presentations might be the most visually impressive presentations you'll ever use. Start with a stunning template, use it as a springboard for your design, adding images, graphics, charts, data visualizations, all from a massive media library. It's super easy to wow any audience with Canva presentations.
So start designing today at canva.com, designed for work. That's canva.com. Hey, everybody. Did you know that Boricua is the name for someone from Puerto Rico? But it's more than just a name. It's a way of life and representation of the vibrant spirit of the island.
Yeah, that's right. It's an island that's filled with adventure around every corner and natural treasures waiting to be explored, like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the entire United States.
That's right. Or you can get swept away by natural beauty and come away with unique stories that could only be experienced in Puerto Rico that remind you of why you travel in the first place.
Visits end, but stories last forever. You don't become a part of the island, it becomes a part of you.
That's right. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
All right. So I think basically what we were saying when we left off, and sorry about the nostalgia here, everybody, but I mean, come on.
You get us in a room
yeah.
and around Halloween, it's going to happen.
So by the early 50s, trick-or-treating was huge and established and had, so if the 1930 to 1960 was the heyday, mm-hmm. the golden age of trick-or-treating, 1950 to 1959 was the salad days of the heyday.
Right. And when did people start complaining about it? The 70s?
No.
And 80s?
No.
90s?
As far back as the 20s.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because those newspaper articles that you can track the progress of Halloween, more often than not, they were like old cranks complaining about how they didn't want to have to give tricks or treats or whatever to little kids.
Right. Don't you blackmail me.
They don't. Yeah, exactly. You know, what are we teaching our kids? And there's actually... if you kind of scratch beneath the surface of trick-or-treating, at first it appears to be kind of a weird power struggle between kids and adults. Mm-hmm. And it definitely is that.
Yeah.
But there's also another power struggle going on between adults of two different minds. Mm-hmm. Ones who are like, you are over-parenting by being upset about this, or like this is just one night a year, it's good for kids. Mm-hmm. And other people are saying, like, this is terrible for kids. Allowing them to go from house to house to beg is just a bad idea. It's unsafe is another way to put it, too. So there's, like, a struggle, weirdly, over yeah. trick-or-treating, and it has to do with under-parenting and over-parenting and that conversation about the whole thing.
I have seen parents ruin kids' experiences, whether it's like a... Easter egg hunt mm-hmm. or trick-or-treating. I've seen this in action.
Because they're too involved?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it comes down to, is just how involved are you in your kids trick-or-treating? For a very brief period, there was very little involvement in kids trick-or-treating.
Yeah.
And a lot of people say that's actually really good for kids in this other way that we've kind of started to evolve toward yeah. is not.
Yeah, I don't remember my parents taking me around trick-or-treating. I'm sure that happened maybe when I was really little, and we certainly would have had to go somewhere else because, mm-hmm. You know, I lived on the dirt road. Yeah, the dirt road with no neighbors or very few of them. Uh-huh. But all of my memories stem from being like probably 10 to 15 mm-hmm. and being completely on my own with my friends.
10 to 15?
10 years old.
But to 15? That's yeah. pretty late.
What, to trick-or-treat?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, we trick-or-treated up until probably the ninth or 10th grade.
Well, we'll get to it, but in some places you get to get arrested for that.
When did you stop? You'd still trick-or-treat if they would let you.
I think I stopped around 13.
No, maybe 15 was too late. Maybe 13 or 14.
You're fine. No, 15's great. go with God.
No, but you're probably right now that I look back. Maybe I went to Halloween parties, but maybe
there's
not
a kind of an unofficial slash official, again, in some places, cutoff after 12.
Really?
You're done. Yeah, because 13, you're a teenager now, and that's not kid stuff. As we'll see, it's allegedly trick-or-treating is a transition from kidhood to adulthood. And by the time you're 13, you've made that transition. That's in your past. It's sad, but it's... I don't know why I'm talking like Christopher Walken all of a sudden, but I am.
Yeah, maybe I wasn't going that late, but I definitely remember going by myself at a certain point. But now with my neighborhood, it's just... I see mostly parents not involved at all. They're there kind of like if your child is two or three, helping them walk to the door and stuff.
Sure.
But otherwise, we're just drinking and the kids are doing their thing.
So let's talk about this then. Let's skip toward the end and we'll jump back, okay?
All right.
There is this debate over, you know, whether it's better to just kind of cross your fingers and hope for the best and let your kids go out and trick-or-treat on their own,
mm-hmm.
whether that's good, mm-hmm. or whether we need to, the world's just too unsafe for that, and we need to much more manage kids trick-or-treating than just letting them go out on their own.
Well, it depends on where you are.
That's the big divide.
Yeah.
And one of my personal heroes, the world's worst mom, Lenore Skenazy,
uh-huh.
who came up with the Free Range Kids blog.
Right.
And the whole movement, frankly, she makes this really great point that when we let kids trick-or-treat, we let them confront danger, like, on their own. And it's real. It's the narrowest margin of danger. I mean, people always talk about, like, the, you know, all, like, the worst things that could happen on Halloween when a kid's out trick-or-treating, getting hit by a car, getting kidnapped by a stranger, mm-hmm. getting like...
an apple
like,
with a razor blade in
yes,
it.
Yes, just stuff that happens, and mm-hmm. it can happen, it's true, but it happens so infrequently that the chances are it's not going to happen, and you're actually better off just letting the kid roll the dice.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as Lenore Skenazy puts it, when you go trick-or-treating, you're transitioning from being a kid to a grown-up,
mm-hmm.
and you're doing this quite literally. You go with your parents first,
mm-hmm.
and they kind of teach you the rules of the road, like
sure.
just take one piece of candy.
Right.
Or that house over there has their lights off, so
don't
leave them alone. They don't want to have anything to do with this.
Yeah.
And then after that, you let them go on their own, right? And they kind of take the ball and roll with it. And she says that that when they're out trick-or-treating, kids dress like grown-ups.
Yeah.
They take to the streets.
At night.
They encounter the scariest possible locals, witches and goblins.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yes, they're doing it at the scariest possible time, night. And the whole thing is dress rehearsal for adulthood.
Mm-hmm.
And that, like, that's the benefit of trick-or-treating.
I don't quite get that. That is the same as adulthood, like you and I all the time walking around at night fighting goblins and witches?
Sure, right, exactly. Where would we have been without trick-or-treating to okay. prepare us for fighting goblins?
All right.
But just confronting fears
sure.
on their own without their parents managing their world for them.
Right.
So that they can handle themselves, have the confidence to know they can handle themselves.
Yeah.
And I guess feel good about having confronted their fears and gotten candy in return. Let's not forget about that.
Yeah.
Now, on the other hand, it's just take the candy. It's fine.
Right.
Mommy and Daddy made it perfect for you. All you have to do is go get the candy. You're in a perfect bubble and everything's fine.
Yeah.
So that's I kind of tend to fall on Lenore Skenazy's side on that.
Well, should we talk a little bit about the, you know, whether or not there have been all these real horror stories over the years
mm-hmm.
and whether or not any of those are true.
Yeah.
As far as the razor blade and the apple and stuff like that, hypodermic needles and candy. This stuff doesn't happen.
No. And the thing to point out, and I know we've talked about it before, is that it was an urban legend that
yeah.
came true.
Right. There was one case, and this is actually kind of funny if you ask me. In 1959, there was a dentist in California named William Shine who took aloe laxative pills and disguised them as candy and gave out 450 of them.
What a jerk.
To kids. And they were all pooping, I guess.
So I think a few of them did poop. Nobody got injured, though.
Right. No, you're not going to get injured from a laxative.
You could poop over poop.
Over poop?
Yeah.
But this is when I think this real story got out, and then all of a sudden it gets morphed into needles and razor blades or poison or candy laced with heroin and stuff like that.
Well, that did happen.
Well, yeah, but that's the thing. Like, the examples that are listed are reverse engineered almost.
Right, right. So there was a little boy in Texas who died from eating a cyanide laced pixie stick.
Right.
In Texas, in, I can't remember what year it was.
74.
And it turned out that it was his dad, that his dad was the scum of the earth who had taken out insurance policies on his own children.
Good Lord.
And then gave them spiked Halloween candy to make it look like some mad poisoner had killed his kids so he could collect insurance. And one of his kids did die. But it wasn't just some random Halloween
right.
poisoner. That guy didn't really exist at the time.
Yeah, 1970 in Detroit was the heroin incident. This kid overdosed. These kids ate their uncle's stash is what really happened.
Right.
And then that uncle was like, oh, crap.
Right.
Let me sprinkle the heroin on the candy and cook up this story.
Yeah.
And maybe cook up some heroin.
Right.
Since I'm cooking.
Yeah.
And to try and get out of this. So again, it really happened, but not in the way that you think.
No. The thing that got everybody, so that William Shine guy, who I just think is a skell for that, because he scared the pants off of America's parents.
Yeah.
He basically said, hey, you know how you're letting your kids run free? Something really bad could happen to them, and I just showed you how.
Yeah.
And from the next year on, the parents were anxiously involved in Halloween like they never had been before.
Sure.
Because of William Shine. But the thing that really killed Halloween, or at least cemented, I think, the anxieties in the heads of parents in America, is that Tylenol poisoner.
Oh, sure.
Canceled Halloween 1982.
Did it really?
Almost drove Ben Cooper costumes out of business. Candy sales went down 50%.
I trick-or-treated in 1982.
Well, your parents didn't love you. I think I did, too. I don't remember not. I would remember not trick-or-treating 1 year.
Yeah, because I would have been 11. That's prime time.
Right.
Apparently, those are the retirement years.
But all of this stuff added a veneer of fear and anxiety on trick-or-treating for parents, not for kids necessarily, but for parents.
Yeah.
And it drew them into what was possibly just a kid-run activity because of fear. Probably irrational fear.
Yeah.
And now you have, to this day, the FDA sending out guidelines around Halloween saying, don't let your kids eat any candy until they bring it home.
Right.
Which is just torture.
Yeah.
And you have to inspect it. And if you see any pinholes or tears or anything that looks weird, just throw it away. Some hospitals say, bring your kids candy and we'll x-ray it.
Yeah.
To see if there's any razor blades or needles in it or something like that. This is the kind of terror that, ironically, is overlaid on Halloween. It's like fun terror has actual real terror on top of it, which makes it less fun.
We don't inspect candy.
Oh, you don't? You roll the dice, huh?
Yeah.
That's great.
I don't know anyone who does.
Really?
No.
Oh, man, I was raised like that.
You inspected candy?
Oh, yeah, my parents were serious about it.
We never did. I don't know. I don't know.
That's maybe, great.
Maybe it's that thing of like, if you're the, because it doesn't happen.
Right. I'm heartened to hear that.
Yeah.
Because when we did our free range kids episode, I remember thinking like, what's going on now? Like kids are treated like this? They're not
allowed to run free? Kids aren't being poisoned by Halloween candy.
Right.
It's just not happening.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Plus in our neighborhood with the sanctioned closure, all the candy is, people aren't buying their own candy. It's like the neighborhood buys all the candy and they congregated in these couple of blocks.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, there could be a madman living among us.
It happens.
But that's like being scared to walk out your front door for fear of being murdered.
Right. Right, Chuck.
You know?
You just can't live that way.
You can't live that way.
You know, Yumi told me a story about a village, like villages in Japan have like a festival or two every year.
Uh-huh.
Where like the whole community comes out. It's like a big deal. And there was one village, little tiny town, where this one woman just, I guess, went mad and poisoned the curry that she brought to the village thing and like,
oh, wow,
killed a bunch of townspeople.
It happens.
It does happen, but you're right. You can't not eat the curry just because of the small, small chance that some mad person has poisoned it.
Yeah, the way I look at it is if that's what happens, then that's, you know,
your number's up.
Your number's up and you're a story in the newspaper.
Right.
To scare other people.
Sure. You get to be immortalized on Stuff You Should Know.
Is trick-or-treat going away, Josh?
I don't know, Chuck.
I say no.
Okay, that's good. I'm glad to hear that. Because, again, I'm living hashtag condo life. I'm out of the action.
Yeah, I mean, there's this the last bit of this article you sent talked about it going away potentially, but I don't think that's ever going to happen. So what are your arguments for it going away, that it might?
My arguments?
Or your, you know.
These are my observations.
Your observations.
One of the big ones is that fear among parents, that helicopter parenting has not been good for trick-or-treating.
Ah.
Okay?
Okay.
But think about it. That's a real struggle going on right now. Over-parenting versus under-parenting. Mm-hmm. Which one's going to win out?
Right.
Okay. Another one is there's a perception that trick-or-treating is dying out, which is kind of funny.
Is there?
Yes, because people are moving back into towns and gentrifying those towns, like we talked about in the historic district episode.
Mm-hmm.
And as they're doing that, trick-or-treating was never huge in the city. And so people who were raised in the suburbs and were used to it are moving into the city, and there's no trick-or-treating going on anymore. So I guess trick-or-treating's dying because that's what I'm seeing.
I beg to differ with that, too.
Okay. But, I mean, you don't live in the city. You live in a neighborhood.
Yeah, but that's all Atlanta is a bunch of neighborhoods.
Okay.
You mean I don't live downtown?
Maybe these people live in Des Moines. I don't know.
No one lives in downtown Atlanta.
No, it's true. Although it has gotten cooler than it was like a decade ago.
Sure. But I beg to differ that trick-or-treating doesn't go on in the cities. I think there are apartment buildings in New York where people trick-or-treat.
Mm-hmm.
Like just because it's not the picket fence suburban neighborhood.
Sure.
I think trick-or-treating goes on everywhere.
But this author,
except my house,
Julie Beck, who wrote in The Atlantic, she put it really well that basically the suburbs and trick-or-treating just go hand in hand.
Sure.
Like the suburbs are set up for trick-or-treating.
Oh, yeah.
You got houses that are close together.
Super safe.
Yep, where people who live there are just well enough off to buy enough candy for the whole neighborhood.
Yeah.
They all have kids. They know each other enough that you're not embarrassed for your kid to go up and trick-or-treat there, mm-hmm. and you know that this candy's not going to be poisoned. In the city, you're much more isolated from one another, even though you're living on top of one another.
Yeah, and I think maybe if we're talking about like areas where there are poor kids and where poverty is run rampant,
mm-hmm.
then maybe there's less traditional trick-or-treating, but there are programs and parties and things they try to do for those kids too.
Okay, so those very things may end up being what kills trick-or-treating. I should say the purest version of trick-or-treating. You can also just make the case, well, that's what it's evolving into and just go with it.
I think that will probably be both, but you're talking about the big Halloween parties, community parties, trunk-or-treating.
Trunk-or-treating in
particular. Or what was it called? Halloween?
Tailgating.
Halloween tailgating.
Trunk-or-treating.
This is the idea that and we had this at our school. We had the Halloween festival, but that did not replace trick-or-treating.
Okay, this replaces trick-or-treating for
right.
a lot of children.
Yeah, so you go out and you get in a big church parking lot, essentially.
Yep.
And you have Bobbin for apples and the dunk tank.
Oh, this is different.
And, huh?
This is a little different than that.
Well, I mean, I've seen these in person and—
Okay, but that's a Halloween festival you're talking about.
No. I'm talking about instead of trick-or-treating—
Okay.
It's a big party—
Okay.
—where they have candy and they have activities and games and stuff.
So are you going from car to car getting candy? Like the cars are houses?
No, not necessarily, but they're giving out candy— I mean, I can't.
My friend, you're not talking about trunk or treating.
It feels very nitpicky to me.
No, but it's not, and here's why.
I'm not talking about a Halloween festival, though.
That's fine.
But you're not talking
about trunk or treating either.
You mean you walk 5 feet to a car,
yes.
and they give you candy, then 5 feet to another car?
Maybe even less than 5 feet.
And they say, don't play any games, don't bob for apples, or don't do anything else. All you're doing is walking to cars.
I'm not saying that they don't have bobbing for apples, but the purpose of trunk or treating is to basically set up a safe ring of cars where the kids are literally penned in.
Yeah.
The kids who used to be the ones who were running the show are now penned in by the anxious adults' cars, handing out candy rather than going to houses, walking
right.
around a church parking lot for trunk or treating instead of trick or treating.
Yes.
These are not the kids who could pull off.
But that
off
is not going to replace trick or treating.
What the kids in the Goonies were able to pull off.
Yeah.
Because they had freedom and spark that kids who trunk or treat are being denied.
Right.
Let me go back to my friend Lenore Skenazy. She says that trunk or treating is just another adult-led activity one that reinforces the community killing idea that kids aren't ever safe outside the home, school, or supervised program. And that is most definitely the message that kids get when they're trunk-or-treating.
Yeah, I think that is not going to kill trick-or-treating or take over trick-or-treating.
We'll see, Chuck. I hope you're right.
Because one thing I have not seen since I've lived in Atlanta is any big trunk-or-treating activities.
Well, that's because you live in Atlanta. All you have to do is go out to the suburbs, and they're everywhere.
Yeah, but the suburbs are made for trick-or-treating. They're out in the neighborhoods.
I got to end on a quote. I ran across website, a church website, that's talking about trunk-or-treating. It's awesome, this quote. It says that the scariest part about the night, this is a trunk-or-treating night, isn't the costumes. It's the possibility that you could miss out on the chance to use trunk-or-treat to build relationships and reach these kids with the gospel.
Well, yeah.
That is the opposite of what Halloween is all about.
That's right.
You got anything else?
It's about arson.
Right, 810 cases of it. Sorry, I'm one of those curmudgeons, it turns out. One more thing.
Yes.
If you like Halloween, go on to our old Stuff You Should Know website and search Halloween and creepy, and you're going to find some amazing slideshows we put together over the years.
Oh, that's right. I remember those.
One of my favorite is cute and cruddy Halloween costumes, vintage Halloween costumes that were really creepy, best jack-o'-lanterns, all sorts of great stuff.
Remember those days where we would count page views and get excited about that?
Mm-hmm, yeah. This one felt like a bit of a tirade.
Yeah?
Was it?
I don't think so.
Okay, good. Well, if you want to know more about Halloween, get out there and trick-or-treat. And since I said that, it's time for listener mail.
This is follow-up on paraphilias that we wanted to read for the last few weeks. Just now getting to it. Hey, guys. Long-time listener, first-time writer. I've had this episode pop up a few times. It's just been on my mind. I'm an RN with MSN. And have background in neurophysiology, who enjoys studying abnormal psych. I understand you were doing a show on a psychological term, but you may have ended up painting wrong ideas onto certain practices, specifically S&M and cross-dressing. From what I've come to know, it's extremely rare that people practice these primarily for sexual gratification. Of course, these practices are adult in nature, but most regard it as an emotional practice or exploration of self. For example, shibari, or rope bondage, takes hundreds of hours of practice to perform, and those that partake describe a meditation-like state as a result, though most would say it's S&M. Most cross-dressers describe the long process of becoming female as cathartic and self-affirming, although be it temporary. Simplifying cross-dressers to those who walk around in high heels to reach completion, well, imagine saying that about a trans woman. Of course, if you were doing these practices for sexual gratification, all the power to you. I suggest you look into kink culture as an episode. It's where a wide range of people congregate and share their interest in a community that is founded off respect and consent. There are meetups and presentations on practices so that others can learn proper technique, though most that practice would like to keep their privacy. And that is from Anonymous.
Thanks a lot, Anonymous. That was a good correction email.
That's right.
Yep. If you want to get in touch with us like Anonymous did to set us straight, we love that kind of thing. You can join us at stuffyoushouldknow.com and check out our social links there. And you can send us an email to stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Are you thirsty? Well, Richard's rainwater is caught clean before it even hits the ground. Rain is naturally pure, so there's no need for harsh chemicals or additives. Richard's rainwater contains no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing. Enjoy the smooth, clean taste of still rainwater or the cold pressured bubbles of sparkling rainwater. Just visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. And for a coupon, text STUFF to 251-292-8887 and receive $2 off a 12-pack case of Richard's Rainwater. Hey everybody, I want to talk to you for a second here about Canva, specifically Canva presentations that are designed for every workplace and every department.
department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation. So start designing today at canva.com. Design for work. Just go to Canva, C-A-N-V-A.com. Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.